This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The National Ag Statistics Service released its grain stocks report showing 1.24 billion bushels of old crop corn in all positions as of September 1st, up 50% from a year ago. Of the total, 462 million bushels were stored on farms and 774 million bushels were off the farm, with both numbers higher than last year. NAS also reported 92 million bushels of soybeans in storage, down 35% from last year. Of the total stocks, 21.3 million bushels of soybeans were stored on farms and 70.6 million bushels were stored off the farm, and both of those numbers were down significantly from 2013. The Renewable Fuel Standard is federal law that forces energy suppliers to use alternative fuels. Todd Gleason has more on what the standard has done and how it operates.
This is a very brief look at the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. It's been in place since 2005. Washington passed the law in hopes of pushing the U.S. towards greater energy independence. The first step has been relatively easy, with U.S. corn farmers stepping up, building ethanol plants, and increasing corn production. About 10% of the nation's gasoline supply is now derived from corn-based ethanol. But phase one is plateauing, says University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good.
You're right. I mean, to date, corn-based ethanol has been the primary biofuel that's been produced and consumed. We've consumed as much as 5 billion bushels of corn per year in making ethanol for the domestic and export market. As the mandates have increased over time, requiring more ethanol, obviously that's pushed the consumption of corn up. It now appears that we're probably plateauing a bit in that scenario. And it does, I think, hinge a lot on EPA decisions in terms of how to enforce the mandate. Those mandates for renewable biofuels, or at least the implied mandate, the total minus the advance, would push us to 15 billion gallons by 2015. And how aggressively we pursue that objective, I think, will determine how rapidly we increase corn consumption. But clearly the major growth is behind us at this point, and the near term we are plateauing corn consumption.
U.S. EPA has some authority to adjust the mandates. Not much, but some. The problem for corn-based ethanol is that the mandate requires 15 billion gallons of renewable fuels in the gasoline supply by 2015. But that 15 billion gallons is greater than the maximum percentage allowed by U.S. EPA. Here's Illinois' Scott Irwin with more details.
The mandates are part of federal legislation that's popularly known as the Renewable Fuel Standards, and they are volumetric minimums of different categories of biofuels that must be blended and used in our domestic fuel supply. For example, Darrell just mentioned that there are targets that are minimums for renewable fuels, which have almost exclusively been in the form of corn-based ethanol, that rise to 15 billion gallons by 2015. And then, so there's sub-mandates for different kinds of biofuels, and then an overall total. And that total is scheduled to go up to 36 billion gallons by 2022. So I think the key for people that may not be familiar with the RFS is that these are not voluntary guidelines. They are, in fact, statutory minimums for which there are civil penalties if the parties obligated under the renewable fuel standards do not comply. So it's the law of the land, literally.
But the law of the land, the mandate for the 15 billion gallons in the gasoline supply cannot be reached. Why? Because U.S. EPA has set a maximum amount of no more than 10% ethanol in a gallon of gasoline at the pump. There are alternatives like E85, but at the regular pump, 10%. That number maxes out at about 13.4 billion gallons annually, and it's related to how much renewable fuel an engine can manage to consume. Washington, D.C. must deal with this inconsistency. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Secretary Tom Vilsack has announced the nation's farmers, ranchers, and fishery cooperatives set a new sales record in 2013 with total business volume of more than $246 billion. That number surpasses the record set the year before by $8 billion. This third consecutive year of record sales by ag cooperatives reflects increased sales in the overall farm economy in 2013. U.S. co-ops also enjoyed a robust job growth over the previous year. The number of full-time employees working for ag co-ops climbed by almost 7,000 in 2013 to 136,000. That's up 5% from 2012. Ag co-ops also enjoyed a record net income of $6.2 billion, besting the previous high of $6.1 billion set in 2012. Co-op income is either reinvested in the co-op for needed improvements or returned to the member owners. It then circulates in local communities. Secretary Vilsack made the announcement to mark the start of October being National Cooperative Month. For an update on the grain markets, I spoke with Arlen Suderman of Water Street Solutions.
We've had a stretch of dry weather to really support crop dry down and harvest progress. The harvest progress overall is slow, not just because of the slow maturity of the crops, but because yields are so high. So that means that it takes longer to cut each acre of corn or beans because the amount of volume of bushels that we're hauling off of those fields. So slow progress, but we've been able to avoid any major problems with the weather. Looks like we're going to see some disruptions due to rain the last half of this week that will slow the harvest down a bit, and then about a five-day break again where it's dry, and then another small system moves across the Midwest. But overall, pretty favorable weather for finishing out this growing season.
And have you heard of any problems with the crop so far, or is it looking pretty healthy?
There are problems here and there. There's disease problems in both the corn and soybeans here and there. There's problems where we were too wet in June, too dry in July and early August. But overall, yields, the big picture story, yields continue to impress. And I think probably the most impressive has been the soybean yields. Soybeans have been very resilient this year, and the overwhelming majority of reports that we're getting in are in the mid-50s to mid-70s on yields for soybeans, even where there were some disease problems. I recognize there are some spots that were lower than that, but I'm talking about the numbers that are most common seem to be in that range. So we're very encouraged with the productivity this year's soybean crop, and that's to take nothing away from how well the corn crop's done as well.
Yeah, we do have two phenomenal crops this year, and hopefully we can get it all out of the field and don't have to worry about drying it down too much in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. I think that's well put, and finding a place to store all those bushels will be a next problem that we deal with. But that beats having a short crop and no bushels to sell.
And when looking at the corn crop, the price just kind of seems to keep dropping for that. Is there any expectation on when we're really going to hit the floor?
Well, in big crop years, we tend to not really hit the bottom until after we've managed to find storage for everything. And so that can be fairly late in the season. Typically, you might look for a bottom once we've harvested 50 to 60% of the crop. In a big crop year, sometimes that bottom may not come until December or sometimes not until January. That doesn't mean that you won't have times maybe where the market bounces for a time or so, but overall the trend tends to continue lower until you get into that period and the trade feels like it finally has a handle on just what the size of the crop is and can start focusing on the demand side of the balance sheet.
Again, that was market analyst for Water Street Solutions, Arlen Suderman. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.